Hello and welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. Today we have a special March for Life preview. The 53rd Annual March for Life is Friday, January 23rd in Washington, D.C. Thousands of pro-lifers, including clergy members, Vice President J.D. Vance, and other lawmakers, are set to rally for the unborn. This year's theme is Life is a Gift. The annual march through the nation's capital celebrates life and seeks to make abortion in the United States unthinkable. This year comes with a little change. Attorney and mother Jenny Bradley Lichter is taking over as the president of the March for Life. This is the first time a mother has held that role. We recently sat down with Jenny for a preview of the rally and a reminder of why we march.
Jenny, you assume the role of president of March for Life in February of 2025. You have almost a full year under your belt. What has the experience been like?
It has been such a great year. It's been a year full of blessings. It's been really exciting. And I just continue to be so blown away by the opportunity to lead this organization that has meant so much to me since I was a teenager. So can I tell you about a few highlights?
Please do.
Okay, great. We might talk about some of these things a little bit more later on, but every time I get out to a state march, it just really fills my cup. On a personal level, I love those events so much. And from the March for Life perspective, they're at the heart of what we do. They're full of young people, the future of the movement. My own kids have been traveling with me to some of the state marches, which has been really special. And just seeing the grassroots pro-life movement gathered in their home communities is incredibly powerful. So that's been really special this year. It's been so special that everywhere I go, truly everywhere I go, people seek me out and chase me down to tell me their March for Life story. And that was something I had not anticipated, just what it means that I now get to be the repository of everyone's sort of memories about the march. But it is incredible how all over this country and kind of all over town here in D.C., people have stories about how the march has impacted them, has formed them, has shaped them, has made them a more committed pro-lifer. People tell me about meeting their spouses at the March for Life or discovering their vocations at the march. It's incredible just to really be fully immersed in how this event has changed people and changed the country over time.
That's incredible. Now, you touched on the state marches and both the national march. Mm-hmm. I think something people have been asking is when Nellie started the March for Life, she was marching so that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. And that was overturned with the Dobbs decision. Mm-hmm. Why is it still important that we march for life right here in our nation's capital?
That's right. It is still important. I'm going to tell you a quick story about Nellie, and then we'll talk about why we keep marching. Nellie Gray, God bless her, the founder of the March for Life and led the march until her death, so she led the march for decades. Nellie, of course, was working to the overturn of Roe, and Roe versus Wade was ultimately overturned on the eve of her birthday. So we always think about that. Every year we think of Nellie and just thank God for her persistence, especially around the time of the Dobbs decision. But it's just such a perfect example of how the Lord has got this, you know?
Amen.
Nellie herself didn't live to see the moment on earth that she had worked for so many decades, but I know that she was rejoicing in heaven. And what a birthday present from the Lord to this incredible woman. So God bless Nellie Gray and what she gave us. Now, Nellie, you're right, initially founded the march to take down Roe versus Wade. But of course, 50 plus years later, it's very clear that we still have a lot of work to do, right? Taking down the Roe regime of abortion on demand across the country was incredibly important. But there are still way too many abortions happening in this country. So that's the number one reason why we're still marching. But more than that, Abby, and again, I understand this more than ever before after this year that I've had. The March for Life in Washington, I think, accomplishes three really important things for the movement that cannot be accomplished any other way with this degree of movement-wide and nationwide impact. And that's, first, forming young people for pro-life mission. The march is bursting at the seams with teenagers and with college students and people in their 20s, like me when I first came as an 18-year-old. That is an incredibly formative time in the lives of young people, and it is exactly the right moment to kind of put them in the middle of an enormous, electrified crowd, marching on behalf of life, and just letting them see, right, that this is a cause worth really throwing yourself into, and that when you do, you're surrounded by so many other people who feel the same way. So the March for Life, first of all, forms young people. Second of all, for those of us who are pro-life veterans, maybe have been in the movement for a long time and been marching for many years, being at the march is also a really important moment of refreshment and being re-energized. And a lot of people have shared that with me this year. Like I said, they'll say, I come to the march and it keeps me going for the whole year. I bottle it up and I take it home with me as I volunteer at my local PRC or as I work with moms in my church community, right? It's that moment of that electrifying crowd that really keep people going in the movement. And third, of course, the public witness impact of having this many people gathered in the heart of our nation's capital. When you stand at the March for Life, you have the Capitol Dome behind the stage and then the Washington Monument behind the marchers. You are right in the heart of the most powerful and important city in the world. And the city shuts down every year on the day of the March for Life. And we have to remember, of course, like the persistence that it takes to come to D.C. in January in particular, especially because it always seems to be sort of the worst day of the year weather-wise, the day of the March for Life, right? Yes. The Lord gives us a chance to show the nation what we're made of year after year. It's so powerful. So that public witness that Nelly was initially trying to harness of witnessing to our legislators, both at the federal level and at the state level as they are consider pro-life laws and policies, and to our cultural elites, our media elites, everyone who wants to say that this issue is over, it's just not true. And the March for Life is the physical embodiment of the pro-life movement's persistence and determination and its youthfulness. Again, the future of the March for Life and the pro-life movement are arrayed on the National Mall every year.
I love that you mentioned that because it's true. And actually, the way I got involved in the pro-life movement was also when I was an undergrad, and that's the first time I ever went to the National March for Life.
Cool.
We had our own Texas March for Life, which was great in the summer. Mm-hmm. But it really does make an impact because you see just how broad it is. Okay, so Dobbs returned the decision back to the states, and the March for Life was very agile, and you guys launched your state march program. Tell us more about them.
That's right. So the State March program has been just growing by leaps and bounds in the last few years. In 2025, we marched in 19 states across the country. This year, we currently have 21 lined up, and I'm sure by the end of the year, we'll have added more, because what we've seen is that states just continuously are reaching out saying, we want to march for life here in our state capital. And our marches are, they're in red states and blue states. They're truly from coast to coast. Every one of them has a little bit of a different flavor. It's been interesting to see. In some places, there's more of a sort of seminarian and clergy presence. In some places, you can tell it's a lot of families with young kids. Many of them are really bursting with high school and college groups. But there's a handful in particular where, in Colorado, for example, not a friendly place for the cause of life, 8 different high schools collaborated to lead the march. And they just brought so much energy. And it's very sweet at these marches, the way the students and the Catholic high school students in particular engage. They oscillate between, for example, I'm thinking of Pennsylvania now, singing the Salve Regina as they march, singing sort of funny pro-life chants that I'm guessing are their school's probably fight song, and they're inserting baby and life and things like that, right, the way the high school students do.
Yes.
And then this fall in particular, chanting about Charlie Kirk and what he meant to them. But that's what they oscillate. It's sort of Catholic songs and hymns are often part of the branding. And then, again, just like chanting and singing and shouting on behalf of life. And it's incredibly beautiful. And their presence lights up everyone else at the event, too.
So there was a recent report in Politico that mentioned that the Trump administration has released Title X family planning funding to Planned Parenthood. This comes amidst the wake of the ACLU dropping its lawsuit against the Trump administration and President Trump making remarks to Republican lawmakers asking them to, quote, be flexible on the Hyde Amendment, which sends taxpayer funding to abortions. What do you make of all of this?
Yeah, that's right. So the response to the comment about being flexible on Hyde was swift and strong from everyone from Speaker Mike Johnson, right, to a lot of other lawmakers on the Hill. And the truth is, we're not going to be flexible on Hyde, right? We can't be flexible with an issue that implicates human life, right? The preeminent issue, abortion. And the Hyde Amendment is pro-life 101, right? It's a baseline policy that has been in place for 50 years and that every pro-life politician knows is just at the very heart of what it means to be a pro-life lawmaker. So, of course, we're not going to be flexible on Hyde. And by that, I mean the pro-life movement certainly won't accept any flexibility on Hyde. And our allies, our pro-life lawmaker allies, have made it clear that they don't intend any flexibility either.
Keeping it on this theme, the midterm elections are coming up.
Yes.
Do you anticipate that affecting any of your work at the March for Life?
Not directly, in the sense that our work at the March, our particular charism in the pro-life movement, right, which, like the body of Christ, has a lot of different elements, all who have different roles, our particular charism is the power of collective public witness, right, first and foremost, and the culture change, as well as, yes, the political change that can come through that. So our work continues no matter what happens in any given presidential or midterm election, and I feel really blessed by being able to have, through our work at the March, that tunnel vision, sort of that laser focus on giving the movement opportunities to come together, again, both for the health of the movement itself and for that moment of public witness that you can't get any other way. So our focus on the National March and the State Marches for Life and growing the State March program will continue no matter what happens on the ballot this fall. I can't believe it's this fall already, but this fall in the midterm elections. More broadly, of course, especially here inside the Beltway, where all we talk about is politics, it feels like sometimes, there are folks who are suggesting that abortion might be a losing issue in the midterms and that maybe folks shouldn't be talking about it so much. I think that's completely wrong. That's wrong. It misreads the electorate. It misunderstands what we've seen in the last few years. There's no data, no examples to support the idea that pro-life politicians have been losing elections since Dobbs. They just haven't been. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of counterexamples, of course, of really strong pro-life politicians who have put life at the center of their work, who have continued to win re-election. Governor Ron DeSantis is Exhibit A, who at the same time that he was fully leaning in Florida to fighting against their bad ballot initiative on abortion, won re-election, right, resoundingly. Yeah.
You mentioned that you started marching at the March for Life when you were a teenager, then as a board member of the March for Life, and now you'll be marching as the president.
That's right.
What has that trajectory been like for you?
It's been so much fun. And again, the March has been just at the center of my, you know, it's on my calendar every January, like so many people. So it's been a part of my life for a long time, starting when I was a freshman in college and rode a bus through the night to Washington with my friends.
Yeah.
That was only the second time I had ever been to D.C. And I think for many of the young marchers, that's probably the case. It's either their first time or one of their first times seeing our nation's capital. So it really felt so electrifying for my friends and for me to be standing again in the shadow of these incredible D.C. landmarks, marching for life surrounded by so many other people. And then I've marched with my kids over the years, and I think back to the years that they were in a carrier on my chest or in a stroller, and then they graduate to being on my husband's shoulders. And then finally they could march on their own holding their own signs, which has been really beautiful as well. And then last year they were on stage with me when I was introduced as the next president, and they will be again this year, which is really neat. But I'd also love to just take a minute to tell you about a year that I wasn't able to march that was so formative for me too, and I suspect is maybe will resonate especially with some of the moms who are able to watch your program. The year that my oldest child was born, he's a winter baby and was born in the winter of 2013-2014, which was a particularly cold winter here in Washington. So I couldn't march that year. He was 2 months old on the day of the March for Life. He'd been sick a lot that winter, and I knew that it would just be irresponsible to take him out in the cold and take him down to the mall. So what I did instead that day while my husband was at work is just I sat holding my baby, my firstborn child, and just prayed through that whole afternoon, knowing that the march was going on at the time, just holding my baby and just praying and crying, honestly, for all of the women who were choosing abortion that day, for all of the moms who had let the culture or their partners or their parents or anyone else in their lives get between them and their babies, right? Which really, after becoming a mom myself, just felt so deeply personal and so profoundly tragic to me, even more so than it ever had before. And that moment and that day was something I thought back to quite a bit when I was discerning about joining the March for Life, right? And just sort of, again, wanting to make sure that moms aren't ever put in the position to have a wedge driven between themselves and their babies. So my team and I pray every time we pray together for mothers who are finding out about an unplanned pregnancy on that day, any mother who's contemplating abortion on that day. I think that's really important. And again, I just know that there's so many other women out there who maybe can't be marching because they're taking care of a sick child or they can't travel, but whose hearts are with other mothers and are really joined in prayer to other moms. And I think that's incredibly important too. It's really great to come to the march when you can, but holding other moms in prayer and other women in prayer is one of the most important things we can do.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for being with us today. It is always a pleasure to have you. And please know that we'll be praying for you throughout these days as you get ready for the march.
Thank you for your prayers, and thanks for having me.
Coming up, nightly news. The head of the Knights of Columbus tells us why he is excited for the March for Life, while revealing some promising numbers about the fraternal organization's membership. You're watching EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome back. One constant at the March for Life is the presence of the Knights of Columbus. The world's largest Catholic fraternal organization has more than 2 million members and does a little bit of everything during the March for Life. For more, we turn to Patrick Kelly, Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus. Mr. Kelly, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, Abby, it's great to be with you, Abigail.
The Knights of Columbus have played an integral role in the March for Life since its inception, organizing volunteers, providing security, encouraging parish participation. And your signs are a well-recognized brand amongst the audience, essentially synonymous with the march. Tell us, what are you expecting at this year's March for Life?
Well, I expect this year's March for Life is going to be big, as big as last year's, maybe even bigger. You know, the crucial thing about the March for Life is it brings young people together, and it really shapes hearts and minds, right? So many generations of people have come to the march, and I can speak from my own personal experience. I did as a young person, and that is what is so important. All these young people come, thousands and thousands of young people, and they realize that the March for Life is here, and they are not alone, that this is a great message for young people to experience, that their pro-life convictions are shared by hundreds of thousands of other people. And I think that's kind of the crucial thing about the march, is it really is an organization, and it's an event that builds solidarity among the pro-life movement.
I love that. And then on the topic of young people, the Knights of Columbus also partner with the Sisters of Life to host Life Fest each year, which is a mass and rally before the March for Life. What led you guys to get involved in that, and what have you seen be the impact with the youth?
Yeah, well, it really evolved over time, and we were talking with the Sisters of Life, and then 4 years ago, we decided to partner with them on this major rally that occurs on the morning of the March for Life, early in the morning, where we bring thousands of young people together to pray, to sing, and to hear pro-life witness talks. So last year, we had 16,000 young people came for this. And this year, we're expecting the same number. And it really is, it's kind of a galvanizing moment, really, to shape young people. And they realize, I think, and no one does this better than the Sisters of Life, they realize that the pro-life message is really a joyful message, and it's one of vibrancy, and it's young, right? It's a young message. And I think, so that's why the Knights of Columbus have always been in lockstep with the Sisters of Life, but especially with Life Fest.
That's incredible. Now, post-Dobbs, the states have become the front lines for the pro-life movement. As a response, the March for Life launched its State March program. What are your views on this program, and have the Knights been involved at the state level?
Yeah, our Knights at the state level are very involved, and this is where it's so important, because as you say, Abigail, after Dobbs, really so much of the action in the pro-life cause is now at the state level. So it's important that these state marches occur in state capitals, and that state legislators see the pro-life movement, and they see the cause, and they see the youth and the vibrancy. So that's why I think it's so important, you know, to do this at the state level. It, obviously, to march in Washington is really, really important, to be there at the U.S. Capitol and at the Supreme Court, but a lot of the action occurs also at the state, so it's important that we're there.
Now, I want to ask you about Cardinal O'Connor, who helped start the Sisters of Life. Some have said that his cause for canonization might be opened. Could you comment on this?
Yeah, well, Cardinal O'Connor was a great friend to the Knights of Columbus. He was a member of the Knights. As you know, he was a Navy admiral, right? He was chief of chaplains. So he was very much, I think, aligned with the Knights of Columbus, with our principle of patriotism. So that is really, we had an affinity with him, but even more so with his advocacy for life. As Archbishop of New York, he had a major platform, right, to really, to bring to the world stage the message of life. And he did that so expertly. But I think the fact that he started the Sisters of Life, that he was the founder of the Sisters of Life, really is a really a living legacy, because now we have so many Sisters of Life who carry on that legacy, and who now, over the next generation and into the future, will really be impacting so many women and really so many lives for the cause of life. You know, you just have to be around the Sisters of Life for a couple of minutes when you just sense the joy that they have. And that's, I think we can really be thankful to Cardinal O'Connor for that.
We're coming up on an interesting year. So we have the midterm elections. A lot of Catholic social issues have been making the headlines, whether it's immigration, it's the life issue. And there seems to be a lot of contention at the political level. You're an organization that works with men, that has this principle of charity, putting gratitude before God and patriotism. What's the unique role that you think the Knights of Columbus can play in this coming year?
You know, the unique role that we can play, I think, is forming men. So, you know, we all know that I think in culture today, men, particularly young men, are struggling. They're struggling with their place in society. I think by most measures, young men, their outcomes are lower than we're seeing in terms of education level, income level, marriage rates. I think what the Knights of Columbus can do is they can help form men and give them a sense of meaning and mission. What does it mean to be an authentic Catholic man? What does it mean to live the good life, right? What does that really mean? And I think that's the most important thing we can do is to help men. You know, if you help the man, you help the family, you help the parish, and really you help society. So that's I think, the Knights of Columbus, our unique role. And I will say this, Abigail, in 2025, we had 100,000 men join the Knights of Columbus. Wow. That is a record number. The last time we saw numbers like that was right after World War I. So something clearly is happening. I think men are searching for this life of a higher purpose. And they see that in the Knights of Columbus.
Amen. Well, Supreme Knight Kelly, thank you so much for your ministry and your mission and the way you're serving our men.
Thank you, Abigail.
Finally, tonight, as we near the 2026 National March for Life in Washington, D.C., the battle for the unborn is also taking place at the state level. And two states have already held their marches for life. Pro-lifers from across Montana joined at the Capitol Rotunda in Helena for a rally and march. Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life of America, was one of several guest speakers. The rally was followed by a prayerful march around the Capitol complex, led by the Knights of Columbus. Sharon Nason, chair of Pro-Life Montana, says their state march focused on the dangers of the abortion pill.
But in the meantime, Montana ranks higher than the national average on abortion pill usage for abortions. We're at like 82%. And I think the average national average is in the 60 percentile range. So we're quite a bit higher. And plus, nobody's really aware of the environmental impact of the abortion pill, because there's been such an increase in the DIY abortions.
In New Hampshire, another 500 pro-lifers met at the state steps of the state house in Concord for a rally and march. Regina Birdsell, a Republican and majority leader of the New Hampshire State Senate, was one of several guest speakers. Jason Hennessy, president of New Hampshire Right to Life, says the state march can offer hope for those who might feel alone in their pro-life beliefs.
The march gives us a chance to talk to each other, to see, oh, wow, there's actually a lot of pro-life people who want to stand for life from the moment of fertilization. We had a lot of students at the March for Life this year. And it's just a great way to kind of come together, get excited at the beginning of our legislative season.
And just a reminder, the 2026 National March for Life in Washington, D.C. takes place on Friday, January 23rd. And you can see it all right here on EWTN. Our team of reporters will bring you all the action as we dive into every angle of the pro-life movement with special guests throughout the day. The theme of this year's rally is Life is a Gift. Our live coverage of the 53rd Annual March for Life starts at 9:30 a.m. Eastern and goes until 3 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to tune in for this historic march right here in the heart of our nation's capital. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Don't forget, you can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on all social media platforms, X, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our new website, EWTNnews.com, your one-stop shop for news from a Catholic perspective. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.